Lectionary at lunch. Welcome, everybody. The Old Testament reading, since they have these Acts substitutions, I got my own bias against that. We go to Psalms for lectionary at lunch, and we're at Psalm 146, which is actually a beautiful hymn. It's usually categorized that. And there's a lot of interesting features, but theologically it's very beautiful as well. Psalm 146, notice, is that it is in the group, the last five psalms from Psalm 145, or from this psalm to 150, notice, all begin and end with the word hallelujah. And so the whole book of Psalms, and remember the name of Psalms, the Hebrew name is Tehillim, praises. So the last portion of the Psalter, there's this uptick in praise. And the general movement of the Psalter is from lament to praise. The great majority of laments occur in the first part of the book. So there's this, so, and as you notice, as you go through, there's this crescendo of praise until you get to Psalm 150, which, in notice, every verse, every colon, begins with hallelujah. Okay? Hallelujah. And so, it kind of, I think, mirrors the movement of the Christian story as we move from lament to praise, as we see our life more in comic terms rather than tragic. In other words, life under the cross, we lament, but we look forward to praise at the end. And so the Psalter is kind of configured that way as well. So this is a great psalm for the Easter season and a great one to preach on. I'll try to point out a few ways to do that when, admittedly, most people find preaching on the Psalms very challenging. I want you to notice, especially as we go through this psalm, what is implicit in the psalm more than what is explicit. It's as if in here the other shoe is about ready to drop, and it never kind of drops. It, of course, does for us because we put it in the Easter season. But I want to show you kind of some of the things going on in the psalm that will hopefully give you some directions to preach on. So we start with verse 1, hallelujah. Notice that that's just the word from hallel, a PL imperative from hallel, to praise. So it's hallelujah. Notice is a shortened form for, of course, Yahweh. So praise Yahweh. All right. Notice that that is a plural imperative, so it's the general call to praise. Then, halleli nafshi et Yahweh. Again, a PL imperative. Here, it's a feminine singular. So it's praise, O my soul, Yahweh. In better English, O my soul, praise Yahweh. All right? Verse 2. Ahalala Yahweh bechayai azamra lelohai beodi. The ahalala, notice, is a PL cohortative. And notice he's talking to himself here. He's talking to his soul from the first colon in verse 1. And so here, he's expressing his intent or his desire. So it's kind of like, I intend to praise you, see? Or I desire to praise you. O Lord, bechayai, with my life. All right? Azamra. Again, notice it's a PL cohortative. I intend to make music, or again, another word to praise, Lelohai, my God, Be'od. Notice you'll see the common word od here, which is usually used as an adverb, yet or still, but it's a substantive that means continuance. And so it's more in my continuance, or as long as I live. Okay. Now notice it brings up the question then, of life and death right here. And for us, the question then presses, well, how long is that going to be? See, I will praise you, Be'od, as long as I exist or as long as I continue. All right? And that's the question that becomes more pressing and is implicitly answered in the rest of the psalm. Notice where he goes then in verse 3. And I think you can begin to think about the direction that a sermon will take when you see how the psalmist begins to formulate an argument. So verse 3, Al tiv techu b'nedivim, Do not trust in Nedivim. That's a word for leaders or princes. Okay, do not trust in princes. Beben Adam, She'ain Lo Teshua. Now notice you have to understand the verb again. Do not trust in Ben Adam. Literally it's a son of man, but notice here this is a meaning that you see also like in Ezekiel, for example, in mortal man or in a mortal man. See, so do not trust in princes. Do not trust in a mortal man. Okay? Now Sheh. Notice that Sheh is a shortened form for Asher. It's very obviously common in Aramaic. Used to be thought that, oh, this is a sign that the psalm or wherever it occurs is very late, but that's not necessarily the case because Sheh also occurs as a relative pronoun in earlier sections of the Bible, you know, acknowledged to be earlier, so it's thought maybe to be a dialectical or a colloquial form. You'll see it a couple times in this psalm. All right, along with some other unusual words. So we want to keep a look at that. So do not trust in princes. In mortal man, don't trust, see, who there is not to him teshua. There is not to him salvation. The root here is from yasha, to save, where we get our word Jesus. All right. So notice now, you have Yahweh. I'm going to praise Yahweh with my life as long as I exist. Contrast with don't put your trust in mortals. Alright? Now he presses that point in verse 4 by describing their end. Teitse ruho yashuv la'ad mato. His ruach, either breath or his soul, depending how you want to translate it, goes out from yatsa, call, imperfect. His breath goes out, yashuv, and he returns. Again, from shuv, shortened form, and he returns la'ad mato, to his ground. All right. No. Again, it seems to be kind of an oblique reference to Genesis chapter 2 and 3. Remember, man was created from afar, the dust of the Adama. And in the curse, it's for dust you art and to dust you will return. And the word Adama is used there as well. So he will return to his dust, to his ground. You know, the ground. So kind of to where he came from. Okay. Now notice where the psalmist goes. Bayom hahu, in that day. See, as readers now, we know what day he's talking about. The day that a man dies. In that day, avdu eshtonotav. In that day, that eshtonotav, you don't have to put it on your vocab cards because it occurs only here. Ashat means to think. And so the word is usually translated as his plans or his ideas. Okay, so in that day, his plans, Abdu, perish. All right, so notice what's in the background here. Yahweh is the one that we're going to praise. Don't put your trust in mortal men. Why? Because he dies. And when he dies, his plans, his ideas die with him. All right. Verse 5. Ashrei she'el Yaakov be'ezro. Sivro al Yahweh Elohav. Ashrei, just that interjection, blessed. All right. Now notice you have that sheh again for Asher. Blessed who God, the God of Jacob, is his help. All right. That bait, most commentaries suggest that it is a form of dittography, you know, from the Yaakov, from the previous word. See, you could also analyze it as a bait of essence or identity. All right. Now notice, blessed who is the one who the God of Jacob is his help. Alright. Sivro is from the root savar, which means to wait or hope, more popular in Aramaic. So this is another dialectical form, like an Aramaism. It only occurs here and a couple other places in the Bible. And it means his hope. All right. So notice that there's a chiasm here. His help, his hope. So it's like two sides of the same coin. His help, his hope is on Yahweh Elohav, his God. Now you're thinking, okay, notice what's implicit here. Mortal men dies. Yahweh, we're going to praise with our life. What does that say about what he's going to do for me ultimately. Where is my hope, and what to what extent can I hope? Verse 6, he now begins to describe who God is. Os shamayim ba'aretz et hayam ve'et kol asher bam. Who makes? Notice that these are all, he's going to use participles here. So, call participle from asa. The one who makes heaven and earth, et hayam, the sea, ve'et kol asher bam, and all which is in them. Notice the how sheh and asher are interchanged here. And that happens not infrequently, see. So you can't use sheh to date this psalm. Okay? One who made heaven and earth, the sea, and all which is in them. Ha shomer emet le'olam. The one who guards emet, faithfulness, forever. And that simply means keeps the faith. He's faithful. All right, verse 7. Osa mishpat la shukim notain lechem la ra'ivim. The one who makes or who does mishpat, justice for the ashukim. That's a call participle passive from ashak. Those who are oppressed. To oppress means ashak. So the one who does justice for the ashukim, for the oppressed. The one who gives lechem, food for the ra'ivim, those who are hungry. Ra'iv is just means hungry, sometimes uses substantive. One who gives food to the hungry. Yahweh is the one who matirs the asusim. Matir is another hifil participle from natar, and it means to free up. The one who frees the asurim from asar means to bind, those who are bound. Now notice, you're already at, we're, as readers of this psalm, we're asking, okay, is this more than just frees kind of physical prisoners, but is it to be taken more as a metaphor, see? And what bonds are you freeing them from? What kind of oppression are they under? And remember, we already have thoughts of death and the inability of any human being to do anything about that. All right, so notice how, like I said at the start, everything's kind of implicit in this psalm. But Yahweh, they're already putting the contrast between Yahweh and earthly leaders. See, earthly leaders die. Yahweh is the creator. He's the one who's faithful, which reminds us of the promises that he has made at the end of verse 6. And the one who now brings justice. Notice how this is a God who rights what's wrong. Okay, so for the oppressed, for those who imprison. Now notice verse 8 where he goes. Yahweh, pokeach ivrim, Yahweh, zokev kefufim. Yahweh Ohav Tzadikim. So Yahweh is the one who opens from Pachak the Ivrim, the blind. Okay, Iver means to be blind. So Yahweh opens the blind. Yahweh Zokaves. Again, this is a rare word, more common in Aramaic, another participle, so another dialectical form. This psalm has quite a number of them. Yahweh lifts up the Kefufim. Again, a passive participle call from Kafaf. Lifts up those who are bowed down. Okay? Again, not that common of a word. Yahweh, Ohev, loves Tzadikim, the righteous ones. Alright? Verse 9. Yahweh Shomer et Gerim Yatom ve'almana ye'odeh. Yahweh guards strangers, the sojourners. From the root is gur, to sojourn, and this is a noun, strangers or foreigners. So Yahweh guards the aliens, the foreigners, the strangers. The yatom, the orphan and the almana and the widow, ye'odeh, he restores. This is a polel form from ud, all right? Polel from ud. So the orphan and the widow, he restores. V'derek rasha'im ye'aveit, and the way of the wicked he ye'aveits, makes crooked. Okay, again, that's a PL imperfect from ein vav tav. Right, or he perverts the way of the crooked. Verse 10, yimlok Yahweh le'olam. Yahweh will reign, or may Yahweh reign le'olam, forever. Elohaik, your God, Zion, O Zion, Lador Vador, for generation upon generation. Hallelujah, praise Yahweh. All right. So notice again that the psalm never comes right out and says explicitly, Yahweh will raise you from the dead. See? Which would be nice if it did. But notice that that is kind of a strong implication given the contrast that the psalmist makes. It's like I said before, the other shoe never drops, but it's right there waiting to drop more and more in it. And that presses on you because he says, don't trust in man. Why? Because they die. Well, the implication is Yahweh is going to last forever. All right. And now, you know, when it talks about blessing, as a reader in verse 5, we begin to ask ourselves, what's the nature of the blessing? Why are we so blessed? Well, what's the, and what content do we fill with this word? He's our help and our hope. See? What does that mean? Is it just for this life only? And again, the implication is that Yahweh can conquer even that foe. So that notice he goes on to immediately in verse 6 talk about Yahweh as the creator. See? The one then who... So this one who created then is faithful at the end of verse 6. And he's the one who rights the wrongs in verse 7. And now notice verse 8 makes the blind see, whether that's kind of a synecdoche for, hey, he heals what ails you. All right? Lifts up the kefufim. Now you're wondering, well, who are those who are kafat, who are down, see? Does that mean those who actually have died or not? See, again, the implication is that, yes, this God can right or reverse even that, all right? Then notice how verse 8 ends with this reminder of the tzaddikim. Yahweh loves the tzaddikim. Well, again, where does that love, what does that love consist of, all right? It goes on to break that down into those who are the most marginalized in society. He restores. As far as the wicked, though, he perverts. Until you get to the final verse 10, forever, let olam, see, Yahweh will reign forever. Well, notice that the rest of the psalm has led us to see that forever means forever, not just for a real long time. What's he going to reign over then, see? What is he king over? So all of it is by implication. So that's why the church puts it post-Easter. We kind of let the other shoe drop again and say, this is our God who finally we've seen actually does have power over death. And he raised his son, Israel reduced to one from the dead. And we who dwell in him have that same promise. So that when we read this psalm in the light of Christ, we begin to see what the fullness of the promises mean and the full implications of what he's saying. And so I think if you make the sermon along those lines, you can really bring a powerful message, about the nature of our hope post-resurrection. All right?